May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free from harm. May all beings love life. May all beings awaken. Welcome to another Cuke Audio Podcast. I'm D.C. Puba of Cuke Audio and Cuke Archives, coming to you from sleepy Sonora with Doggett Bandita, Feline Kachita, and dear lovely Katrinka. So I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable and able to get out and do whatever it is you want within the limitations of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. Today we have another installment of Life in Bali, and Dr. Raya is going to join us again. Ida Ayu Narayani, that's her full name. Raya comes out of Narayani. She's a physician with the Global Health Center in Sonora. Very nice place. And this is the third time she has been with us as a guest in Life in Bali. The reason is I'm sort of overwhelmed with taking on too much and things I'm doing, and I didn't nail anybody down to talk to for this week, but I had some conversation with Raya left over from the last time, which happened around New Year's. But I remember the date. It was the 2nd of January. You know why? Because the audio file was dated in the name. Anyway, she has some interesting things to say, I think I'll just go right into it because I got to get to this other stuff. I'll tell you what other stuff I'm doing. All right, you know I post two blog posts, 6 days a week, every day except Sunday. Sunday's the only day I don't go to church. a Zen one on Cuke What's New blog, and then what I call a nonsense one. I have a podcast 6 days a week. Three of them you know are mini podcasts. One is a Zen guest, one's a Bali guest, and then one I'm reading from something I wrote. So I've been reading from Tassara Stories.
I've been working on, I had some edits of some material I'd written for Tassara Stories. You know, there's transcripts to go along with what I'm reading it, right? And so I've been going over that the last couple of days, thinking about that. And that is not the first priority. But I got sort of bogged down in a really stupid mistake that I'm not going to explain. It's too sort of technical. But just another example of, I don't know, I think it's something that's happening a lot more with age. I just make really stupid mistakes. Don't think of something and keep going ahead. Just sort of, you know, it's like I'm not thinking enough. I'm just cruising along doing something and I realize, God, I just spent all day working on something. I didn't really understand a mistake I was making. Anyway. That's enough. And then I woke up in the middle of the night last night, which I do every night, almost every night, and I have to go pee. And I just went, oh my God. I just realized then, bang, why didn't I think of that? Why didn't I stop before I started doing it? Because it was there was some problem I was having, and think, all right, what's the problem? Why am I having it? Maybe there's some. No, I just kept going ahead. And so, anyway, so that took a lot of time. All right, so that's Dasara Stories. And you know what I've read, I've had 19 Tuesdays where I posted pieces from that. And so I've put up about, I don't know, over 50 by now, I'd say, maybe around 50. And there's that many to go, and I could write more, but we'll see. And then maybe some book will come out of it, or some audio book or something. So Wendy Persig is working on that with me. While she does Shunyu Suzuki lecture light edits with Peter Ford, who I work with. And so, all right, there's that. Then the other thing is, I read all of Crooked Cucumber. So I'm getting that together for an audiobook. I've got it all recorded, you know. And I'm trying to, I'm in touch with Penguin Random House, which published it 22 years ago under the Broadway imprint. And I'm talking to them about a second edition, because there's so many corrections and everything now. So anyway, I'm doing this second edition. Anyway, I'm getting it ready, because it's, you know, I've got to do it. So the audiobook reflects that. And, you know, there's been a lot of work done on that. The most brilliant and fastidious, and Bill Redigan went over, after I'd done all that, he went over every audio and every transcript and sent me notes on every little place where I'd made a mistake in the audio or in the transcript, and suggesting some, you know, little changes I might make there. Not too much, not real good stuff. But then in going over the audio again, I'm spending hours on each one because, you know, and right now I've started at the first. When Bill and I went over it, we started at the end and went back. But now I'm starting at the first. And that's when I first started recording. And there's too many pops and clicks in it. And so I'm taking them out. I can take almost all of them out. Every once in a while, one gets embedded in something. And I won't try to replace that word. Now, there are some words I've got to put in where I would reading and say the wrong word, you know, or leave something out. And so when I record and put that in, I've got to try to duplicate the type of voice I had then, so it's not distracting, you know, it doesn't sound too weird. And sometimes I nail it, and sometimes I can't get it very well, and I just do the best I can. But, you know, your voice is always changing. And I've done a recording, you know, of songs. And if you go back and have to put something into a song, boy, it's hard to make it the same voice you had, because your voice is always changing. And if you get into recording, you'll definitely see that. And it's really interesting. It's just like ours. We think we have this self that is one particular thing, you know, but it's always changing. Same with the voice. Same with our body, you know, it's changing sort of slow. Oh, one thing about, you know, trying to get the clicks out and the pops and stuff. You know, don't get them all out, but just the bad ones and everything, because it's just sort of natural in talking. But because of doing that, see, there's one right there. I'll leave that in. Because of doing that, going over it, I notice now in movies and on, you know, in the series that are on Netflix and Amazon and stuff, and news and different things. I hear a lot of clicks. And there was one thing, I mean, it was a show where they got millions of dollars in it. And I think, God, I just kept hearing these clicks. And, you know, they couldn't afford to have somebody go through. I mean, you could teach an intern how to take them out and identify them. You can see them. You get used to it. You can see it in the WAV file. But they're spikes. They're real thin spikes. Shoot way up. And then there's click removers, you know. And I run a click remover over the audio, but that won't get it all. And you don't want it to run it too heavy or it'll affect the sound. But it helps. It helps. But anyway, I just wanted to say I've noticed that in commercial sound in movies and everything. And I hear it now. I've never noticed it before. So anyway, so that wanting to get the audiobook ready, that would be a nice commercial product. I mean, I would try to make it available, as you know, and of course the podcasts are all there to listen to for free, but it'd be neat to have an audiobook. So I don't know anything about that business. I own the audio rights. I'll try to get it together and do it right. Maybe I ought to be looking into the practical end of it, but I'm just getting it ready now. So there's that. And Tassara stories and that other stuff. And responding to people, oh, wow, all the time. So anyway, that sort of stuff I'm doing. And sometimes I start falling behind. And it's sort of like I was on a safari in India, a camel safari, that's what they call it. And boy, those camels are hard to ride. I want to tell you, I rode horses when I was a kid, and camel ain't no horse. Wow. I admire anybody that's got riding camels down, and you know people do, but it's difficult. And camels, wow, they're big and they got personalities. So anyway, I was with, there were four of us that were the paying customers, the guests, and there were two guys who are guides. And we went out of Jaisalmer, right on by the Pakistani border into the desert. This is how long ago? This is about 17 years ago. I was by far the oldest one. And we went way into the desert, you know, I mean, sand dunes and stuff like that, too. It was cool. And, but it was, I mean, not always in that sort of total sand dune thing, but sometimes. And it was so hard, I started walking. And we were 3 days doing this. I started walking because, I mean, it was good exercise. And it was just hard riding the camel. And man, keeping up, I want to tell you, keeping up with them was so hard. I had to walk so fast. And sometimes they'd start to get too far away. And they'd start to disappear over. And I'd think, oh my God, I'm going to be lost. I'm going to be out here in the desert by myself. But I'd catch up. Or they, you know, finally they'd stop and take a break. Wow. And let me tell you at the end, I was, 17 years ago, I was about, 59 years old, 58, 59 years old. And the other people were much younger. The other guy was 28. And there were two women with us who were 40 or something, or in their 30s, say in their 30s. And when it was all over, I was the only one who wasn't sore. Because I did that. But anyway, the whole reason I got into that was trying to get all this stuff done to keep up with everything. Sometimes I start falling behind, like I did yesterday because of getting trapped in, you know, something took too long. And I just got enmeshed in it. And it's like I'm starting to get behind in everything. It's like it's going ahead and it's disappearing into the horizon. But now I'm catching up again. All right, so that's what my life is like. It's just chasing after. It's like I'm on a treadmill. And I think I'm going somewhere. All right, so that's enough of that. Let's get to Raya. So let's give her a call. Let's give her a call a month ago. Okay, here we go. This is at the point that we're coming into the conversation between Raya and me. We had been talking about climate change. So, you know, and serious consequences of climate change. So that's where we come in. Now, you're Hindu, and I'm part Hindu. And
I was born in a Hindu family, yes, raised as one as well.
You were born in a Hindu family, but yeah. You understand the Hindu approach.
The
one thing I like about some Hindu mythology, it's to me, all religion is just myth, you know, it's like ways of talking about
the esoteric subject.
Yeah, right. The esoteric stuff, exactly. Levels of reality that we can't talk about with normal language. It just seems to me like this is a period where Shiva is very strong. And Shiva is, you know, often called the destroyer, but one fellow who helps me, he said he likes to think of Shiva as transformation. That's a positive way of looking at it. But do you have a sense of a bigger picture than just the story of life on Earth and the human race, and there's our lifetime, then there's the lifetime of our species, then there's the lifetime of our biosphere. Do you see that all that existing within something bigger?
Yes, I do. And going back a little bit to the Shiva one, when you said it's a positive way to look at it, and just the word, the translation of what Shiva is, the role of him, in English and also in Bahasa, the energy that he brings is being translated into a destroyer, or in Bahasa is pangrusak. But the thing is, so if we look at the trinity of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, Brahma as a creator, and then Vishnu as a nurturer, and then Shiva for a lot of people, and this is, I feel, something that is kind of lost in translation, him being portrayed as a destroyer. I wouldn't completely agree with that, but I also wouldn't completely disagree with that, because all in all, we have, like, you know, our life cycle is something born, and it's growing by being nurtured, and then it dies, and it's a form of transformation itself, and that's what Shiva role is. So something is being birthed or being born from the Brahma energy, and then it's being nurtured through the Vishnu energy, and then after that it's being recycled, it's being transformed, it's being well, maybe destroyed from Shiva energy, because that's just like in a way how life is. And I feel that's the beauty of life in its temporarity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, imagine if we have the knowledge that we live forever, that we're forever strong, that we're forever healthy, that we're forever invincible. I cannot imagine the amount or the extent of things that us human being would be able to do, you know, if we have that sense and that knowledge that we're going to be forever here. And I think in a lot of way, that's where the beauty of life is, in the temporarity of it, that we know at any moment, mm-hmm. this conversation will end, you know, this meeting will end. Or you will meet some other people, and then you are going to be in very present at that moment with that people, or you're going to have this lesson in life, or like you're going to have that pain. And everything is temporary. Like pain is temporary, joy is temporary, suffering is temporary. So I think that's the beauty of it, because it humbles us and it reminds us to be fully in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because this exact moment when you're talking to someone, or when you're fully engaged with someone, this exact moment could end at any time. And it sort of, in a lot of way, humbles you and reminds you that, you know, you appreciate every second of it. You appreciate every moment that this person still, you know, exists in front of you, talking to you or sharing with you. And but when it's gone, by the time when it's gone, then it's just another reminder of life that, hey, you know, yes, it ends, but another things will come along, a new interaction will come along, a new people, a new connection, a new engagement, or maybe with the same person, but a whole different interaction. So I think that in a lot of ways is where the beauty of life lies in.
Mm-hmm.
And the temporarity of it for me.
Mm. Yeah, well said, well said. That's well said.
And in terms of what were we discussing before? I think you were asking me something like a big picture.
Well, I said, there's the transience of everything. Everything's born and dies, and actually everything is can be seen as being born and dying constantly on different levels. But then there's the personal lifespan of an individual person. So,
mm-hmm.
And so each individual, the fact of that they know they were born and they know they were nurtured, but it's very hard to really face the fact that one is going to die. So there's that, but then some people take they feel better, you know, they feel better about it all because they have family, and the family will continue. One of the most important things for human beings, and this is going back to primitive societies, is continuing your gene line. Continuing the lineage, creating things that will last. Some sense that people have some sense that immortality is in your family continuing and leaving things behind. The way I see it, and the way I've seen it for a long, long time, is that things like knowledge, civilization, family, all those things, they have lifespans too. And the earth has a lifespan, and the biosphere.
Yeah.
And we can see that now, and we can see there's actually very serious threat, not just to civilization or the human race, but to all levels of the biosphere. That were unimaginable that we'd be in such a situation. And it's not just climate change. The amount of nuclear weapons that we have in this world and radiation and all that the threat from nuclear accidents, especially nuclear weapons accidents, is enormous. So I was saying, even with all that, do you have a sense of a bigger picture that where something you're grounded in, something that is your fundamental reality that's untouched by the birth and death of individuals and planets?
I think the answer will be the same as what I said before, that everything is temporary, even my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that pain is temporary, suffering is temporary, even joy is temporary. And like what you said, the family lineage, our legacy is temporary. Everything is temporary, and in that sense, knowing deeply that everything change.
Yeah.
And change is the only constant.
Yes.
That in a lot of ways is something that is grounding for me.
Yes.
Because at least, I mean, it gives me a sense that, okay, the situation that I'm in right now, whatever that is, if it's pain and suffering, I know that this is only temporary, and there's going to be a time when it's not here anymore. But when will that time be? I don't know. But for now, I just need to, you know, maybe sit with the pain, sit with the suffering, and just being a good student of life, basically learning what is it trying to teach me at this moment.
Yeah.
And in another scenario, when it's joy, then it's just for me to also humbling response in a way that, oh, this is temporary, this is going to pass. Let me just enjoy it while it's still here, because nothing lasts.
Well, I think those are wise words.
It's a good news. It's a good news and a bad news in a lot of way for me, that nothing lasts.
And
I think that's what I find my sense of ground and fundamental centered.
Yeah.
When I'm swimming through all of this, whatever life is.
Yeah.
Is presenting, you know?
Yeah. Well, to me, what you just said is part of the fundamental essence of what some people, I know Aldous Huxley called the perennial philosophy, or the wisdom that one finds coming from all cultures, from all over the world, the realization that change is the only constant. This is perennial philosophy, like an eternal truth. very impressive. Yeah, thank you. You've made my day. You've got an appointment coming up, I think.
At 6, yeah, in an area around Seminyak. Oh, and by the way, I don't know anything about perennial philosophy. I will look it up.
Well, it just means that that's not important. It just means, the wisdom that one finds in various traditions, that there is, if you look at the essence of great wisdom traditions, the essence is the same, or is closely related. If a Muslim, a Christian, a Jewish, Buddhist, mystics get together, I don't think they have a lot to disagree about. You know, if those who look at those traditions from a fundamentalist or literal point of view, believing a lot of things, then they'll argue and get into fights. I don't like the word fundamentalist used that way, because the fundamental should mean it shouldn't mean simplistic, literal approach. It should mean a wise and deep approach.
It should encapsulate it should cover basically everything, but it's also the essence at the same time.
Yeah. Well,
it shouldn't be simplistic. I agree.
Is there anything else you'd like to say? I'm very satisfied with our conversation up to this point.
I know this is you know what, like, this is something that, I mean, I really, really appreciate people who are open and honest and in a way let themselves broaden expand their horizon way beyond what they were conditioned for.
Yes.
Because, you know, like, I mean, you come from a different culture than I am. And I meet people from a lot of different cultures as well. And it's really easy to stay and being trapped in your own conditioning.
Yeah.
You know, the culture you were brought up in, the family, all the values that you were basically raised in. And it's very heartwarming for me whenever I talk to someone who let themselves expand their horizon beyond what they were being spoon-fed or being conditioned into.
Yeah.
And in a lot of times in my experience, it doesn't take like an intelligent person or human being to be able to do that. It's not about an open mind, but I think a lot of them have a similarity in the sense that they have open heart rather than open mind. Does that make sense?
Yes. Well said. Well said. Yeah.
And I think this is what, I think I'm not saying that I would like to see more and more of these people and diminish the other kind of people. No, but I'm just saying that I really, really appreciate when I meet and encounter and engage with this kind of people, because we have a lot of intelligent human being, intelligent persons in this entire world already. Yeah.
Yeah.
But someone who is open heart, someone who is kind, someone who is respectful towards other human being and letting themselves learning something new beyond what they were told, or letting themselves growing their understanding, their compassion towards other, not just human being, but like other species as well. That's the kind of jewel that I cherish whenever I meet this kind of people.
That's well said. I agree completely. Good point. To me, you are what I would call, just looking at it from one point of view, an international person. You you know, you had your year in Norway when you were a teenager, and then when you were early 20s, how long did you spend in England?
A year as well.
Uh-huh. And I mean, those clearly were very helpful to you. But like you said, that being an international person isn't enough. It isn't the key. The key is having an open heart. But I think you have both, and that's a good combination because, you know, you've gotten beyond ethnocentrism. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's, you know, like you say, most people don't. Most people just attached to the beliefs that they were given as they were growing up. And I'm sure I do to many. I mean, mm-hmm. we have, you know, our worldview, of course, is many ways in which if we could be placed 100 years from now, if there's still a civilization, then we would be found to be very backward, probably.
Probably.
And have to be educated about new ways of looking at things.
Probably. And look, I mean, it's not, I'm not like judging or like blaming people who stay in their conditioning, of course not, because like for the simple fact that some people don't have the chance to travel, for example, or like expand their travel through meeting different people, meeting different person from different backgrounds, culture, different walks of life. And that on its own is sometimes limiting one's capacity to expand their horizon. But and of course, like there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong to be and stay in your conditioning, because a lot of times I meet like people who are like, for example, a simple Balinese person in my village who's never been anywhere outside of their village, or maybe or outside of Bali, but they have this wisdom. They have this fine sense in tuning to what life is.
Yes.
And I find a lot of times it's not about how much you know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not about how well versed you are in a lot of different subject or a lot of different knowledge. But a lot of time it's about how you treat other people, how you treat yourself, how kind you are towards other people, how respectful you are. Because it doesn't even matter if you don't understand the culture that this person is deeply engaged in. But if you could spare your compassion and kindness and respect, you end up with a much larger understanding of the different side of life, rather than your friend who is probably, I don't know, an expert in whatever anthropology or, you know, like intelligent kind of person. I think it's something that we, as a humanity and society, we put a lot of praise into this intellectual capability. Which, of course, it's not a wrong thing as well, because we have progressed so far by using the virtue of that. But the emotional intelligence, the spiritual intelligence of human being, I think, is something that would, in a lot of way, differentiate us from, let's say, robot or artificial intelligence. And I'm talking about like in the future, right? Well, a lot of our works could be changed like with automatization, like robot or artificial intelligence, right? And then the last question will be, what makes us truly human? You know, what would differentiate us from from the robot or the artificial intelligence that we could create.
Yeah. Well, I think you've expressed what differentiates us from artificial intelligence, at least artificial intelligence as I understand it.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
The rise of artificial intelligence, the rise of automatization in job markets, that's something that we're going to see more and more in the future. I mean, even like for me as a doctor, I think like my job could be easily replaced by artificial intelligence, you know? And then what's left is, of course, there are going to be some aspect within those artificial intelligence that cannot be touched by it, and only human doctors could provide that. Then the question becomes exactly that: what differentiate human doctors from artificial intelligence doctors? What is the other additional value that us as a human being could have compared to the robot doctors, for example?
Indeed. You can keep going. I'm enjoying what you're saying.
Yeah, and so one of my favorite author, I don't know if you've heard of Yuval Noah Harari.
Oh, no, no. I'm not a good reader, actually. I'm sort of ignorant myself. But go on, tell us.
So he has 3 books already so far. First book is Homo Sapiens and Homo Deus. And then the third one is 21 Lessons from the 21st Century.
Oh, wow. And sounds good.
Yeah, it is. And he's a professor of history and university in Israel, in Tel Aviv. He's Israeli.
Mm-hmm.
And from his first book, he's discussing about why is it that Homo sapiens, us human being, is the species that basically runs the world, right? How the history shaped us, how our ability actually shaped us into the way that we are right now. And then in the second book is basically explaining of what is the future of human being, how is it possible and look like. Again, this is not a deterministic theory. It's one of the possibilities, but he frames that according to the thousands of years of human history and evolution and development, and looking at the pattern, everything, how we are, like how possible it is for us to have that, to be in that kind of future. And one of the things that he talks about a lot is the rise of artificial intelligence and of course the ecological catastrophe. I think you would really, really find his piece of writing is really interesting. But if you are not much of a reader, he does a lot of talk as well.
Oh, I'm worse at that. I'd rather read.
Yeah, so YouTube and then TED Talk. And here's the catch as well. He's a practitioner of Vipassana meditation.
Oh, yeah.
He's been practicing that for over 20 years, let's say. Yeah, and to his words, it is actually the practice that helped him to focus on what really matters. Because in the practice itself, Vipassana, you basically focus on your breathing, right? And then you focus on your center, and letting all the distraction be just, you know, passing. You note that, but then you let it pass. And that's exactly how is his working and thinking process is.
Yeah.
To really stay on what matters and to really see humanity on the center of its being. And that's why I find, like, he is my favorite author for a reason. Of course, like, from the intellectual side of it, from his expertise, but also the way that he's also a spiritual human being as well.
Mm.
And seeing the merge between the two, you know, you see that, you clearly see that it doesn't have to exist separately. You know, science and spirituality is not something
that
is separate.
Oh yeah, you know? No, I've long said that. I've said that there is absolutely no conflict.
No, exactly.
Between science and spirituality, there's no possible conflict.
Exactly. Exactly. Albert Einstein himself is a spiritual man as well. And yeah. Look at his work.
There's a conflict between people believing things and thinking that's religion and science.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, exactly.
Real spiritual practice isn't stuck on narrow beliefs.
No, exactly. And I think the conflict here is not between science and spirituality or science and religion, but the conflict here is actually between men and their ego.
Yeah.
You know, the scientists and the ego, the religions and their ego, the spiritual people and their ego. And ego is the one that is fueling all of this conflict, basically.
Yeah.
Because I don't see and I don't feel and I don't think that science and spirituality should be a two different entities that is exclusive from each other.
No,
that's my take.
No, you know, the way I see it, you know who plays the role of ego in the Bible?
Is that human or Satan?
Satan.
Yeah.
The
okay,
devil.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Satan.
Yeah.
Satan is the accuser.
Mm-hmm.
Satan is the accuser. So Satan can be judgmentalism, can be revenge. The devil is, you know, like when Jesus went into the desert and struggled with the devil. He's struggling with himself.
There was no devil there.
Yeah,
he's just there with himself.
The Catholic priest I did a podcast with on Christmas. Well, I put it up Christmas Day. I was in a class of his once, and somebody asked, "Well, what's the devil?" He said, "The devil is the self."
Yeah, exactly.
but you know, that would be the self in terms of a person's attachment to a false idea of a self and clinging to a self. The word self has so many different meanings and uses.
I find a lot of time this hard attachment towards oneself is based on the way each people build their own self-worth.
Their own what?
Someone who, their own self-worth.
Oh, yeah, all right.
So someone who is like, for example, highly intelligent, top of the class, everything. It's really easy for this person to ties their identity, ties their self-worth into their intelligence. And anything that that seem or being perceived as an attack to it could be felt as an attack to one identity or one self-worth. And another kind of example that I also observe, for example, in someone's ability or in someone's beauty, for example, someone who put a lot of their self-worth and attach it strongly to their look, for example, anything that could be seen and perceived as an attack to it, any kind of comment or criticism, or even like anything that is less than a praise, could be seen as an attack to their self-worth. And I think it's interesting that in the question of ego, of this kind of devilish behavior, no, not behavior, but like characteristic, it goes back, a lot of it I see goes back to how we see ourselves, how we see our worth, how we, what kind of thing we place on our worth, and whether or not it is built by something that is external. I don't know if that, if anything I say make any sense.
Oh yeah.
But...
No, it all does. Yeah, you make a lot of sense. The sense of self-worth, the absolute sense of self-worth, to me is our fundamental shared reality. And it can't be taken away from us. But we have other things. I mean, we can also appreciate the fact that we have a nice voice or something, but that's a little shallower or whatever, you know. Our,
of course.
A person might feel. The thing is that anything that can be lost, it's better not to base one's sense, ultimate sense of self-worth on it. So we might be proud that we have a nice singing voice or that we have a good memory. Ha ha.
exactly
something like that, but it's best to have our sense of worth, self-worth, or there are different use of the word self, our sense of worth being based on something that we can't lose, and that's something that we can't put our finger on, we can't say what it is.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Because
I think, like, when that's the question, what is the thing that we cannot lose? Everything that is attached to us right now, our body, our age, our youth, our wealth, or even our family, our intelligence, every single one of it, we can lose that anytime, even our body, right?
Yeah, right. We lose it all.
We lose it all, then at the end it becomes, what do we put our worth in, and what's the thing that we cannot lose from us? And in a lot of my reflection time, I feel like it's in nothing, actually. Like, I do not need, maybe we don't need a specific reason or a specific things that we could grab on and assigning it as our worth. Maybe we are already worthy just as we are.
Yeah. Well, your use of the word nothing set off a little light bulb in my head. I mean, to me, in terms, it to me, you know, ultimate truth gets down basically to zero. But it includes all the numbers and everything else. But it's something that we can't find if we look for it.
Maybe because we don't need to look for it.
Yeah.
Maybe because it's already here.
Yeah.
That's a question, actually. That's like general wonderment.
Yeah.
Because, of course, I don't know everything, and I don't think I need to know. I mean, I don't think I need to know everything right now. Because what's the fun in it? I'm still young. I hope I will reveal and know a lot more about more things from different person. I'm actually looking forward to it. So I'm content in saying that I don't know.
I think it should be illegal for you to be any wiser than you are at your age. What year were you born in?
91.
That's when my how old is Clay? My 29-year-old son was born in
'91.
He was born in Japan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 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 Good for you. That's great. I think we should, I hate to part, but I think we should call it a day. And because my beloved wife suggests we meet at Warung Kichil.
Yes.
Do you know it?
No, I don't know where it is, but I'm sure they have good food or lovely place.
Yeah, when it's a really, really tiny little place. You know, it's off Tumblingen. You know where Soul in the Bowl is on Tumblingen?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, it's yeah, that yeah, street. Yeah. It's Dayung? Dayung?
Okay.
Is it Dayung? Mm-hmm.
I think do you?
It's just down there a little ways on the right, and it's really good. It basically, when Yoman, I have this BMW driver that's been driving me for 6 years. Anytime I need to go somewhere, you know, and I'll when we go out a lot, if I can, I bring our dog, not his and mine, my wife's and my dog.
That's nice.
They have these two tiny little tables in front, and then I'll tie Bondi there and go in and get the food and sit down and eat. And Yoman will be there, and he'll look at it, and he'll go, Indonesian food. he said, oh, yeah. And, you know, I always get him whatever he wants.
Yeah.
It's really good. But they also have salads, and they have really, really good percadel.
Nice
corn fritters.
I love.
They translate. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'll say, "Hey, Nyoma, let's stop by Warung Kichil real quick," and he'll say, "Oh, you want a corn fritter?" He'll say, "You want a percadel?" I say, "Yeah, you want anything?" And he usually says no, but I'll say, "I'll get you a drink." But I wanted to walk there, and that's 35-minute walk, and she wants me there at 5:30.
But it was great to talk to you again.
Yeah,
I also have another appointment.
Yeah,
but it's really, really great to talk to you.
Yeah,
hopefully I wish you good health and for Katrinka as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, you take care of yourself.
I will.
Don't get the virus. You'll be able to get a vaccine pretty soon. You don't know what vaccine yet, do you?
It's going to be the Sinopharm from the Chinese manufacturer. I think the one that the government has a deal on.
Yeah. What's the time period between the first and second shot?
I think it's going to be a month.
A month?
Or 28 days. Yeah, so you have like two doses, right?
Yeah.
And from first to second one, I think it's the 28 days.
Yeah. So, I look forward to getting it. Do you feel confident about it?
I don't know. I mean, it's a yes and no for me. But I think I'm going to have to, this is what I'm going to say right now. I'm going to have to do a lot more in-depth research about it until I feel completely confident or not.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of health workers, medical workers. What term do they use? There's a lot of, health or medical workers around the world who have that point of view about all the vaccines, you know, sort of want to see, how the data builds on them. And it's like a big experiment being conducted. So far it looks all right. So
yeah,
we'll see.
So far it looks good. right. So we'll see exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been wonderful talking with you. And
You too.
you have a good evening and have a great year.
Thank you. You
All
too.
right. Okay. Bye bye.
Bye, Mr. Bye.
Bye.
Send my regards to
I
Katrinka.
will. I will. Yeah. Take care.
Yes, bye.
So, thank you very much, Ryan. That was great. Hey, you know, I recorded it this already, an ending, a goodbye. And I was in bed just doing some, just adding the music, getting ready to upload it. And the ending wasn't there. So that's weird. Not sure what happened. But hey, if by some reason the ending, which was very brief, is stuck somewhere in the middle, I hope someone will tell me. Anyway, all right, so we'll probably hear from Raya again. I'm going to try to get a vaccine report from her because she's been looking into that with the head doctor at the Global Health Clinic. Hey, it's raining. I don't know if you can hear that. But still rainy season, still raining. Raining a lot for rainy season this year. This has been a Duke Audio podcast. I'm DC Poobah of Duke Audio and Duke Archives, coming to you from sleepy Sonora with Doggy Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka, who's sound asleep there in the dark. I came out to the living room. It's dark too, just my computer screen. And we're all wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.